This is why the devil is trying to stamp out this doctrine. Because he knows the natural stimulation for holy living that it brings to the child of God. You show me someone who believes in the imminent return of Christ, and I'll show you someone that's sold out for the cause of Christ. Show me someone that doesn't think Jesus is going to come back for the next 1,000 years, and I'll show you someone probably in slumber, spiritually speaking. That's what prophecy does. That's its purpose. Which takes us to question number 10. Is this promise, and I have to answer this because I struggled with this for many years, is this promise only for Philadelphia? I thought, well, this is just a promise to the Church of Philadelphia. This isn't a promise to me living in the 21st century, because verse 7 comes before verse 10. You guys with me on that? And verse 7 explains who these promises are given to. It says, and to the angel of the church of Philadelphia, right. Now, where is Philadelphia? That's not our 1776 Hall of Independence there in the United States. Philadelphia is actually in Asia Minor. There was John on Patmos, a little island there. What was he doing out there? Vacationing? No. That's what Domitian did to criminals. That's what Domitian did to people that wouldn't keep their mouths shut. You know why Domitian didn't like John? Because John kept talking about a coming kingdom. Domitian didn't like that because he was a king. And so it's very well demonstrated in extra-biblical writings that Nero would cut your head off. Domitian would maroon you out on desert islands. Or ocean islands. There's many examples in extra-biblical literature of that happening during the Domitian reign. So there is John out on this island in the middle of nowhere, saying to himself, I must be outside of the will of God. When in fact, it was the will of God for him to be out there, because that's where he was going to receive the contents that we call the Book of Revelation. See, you might be in some place of confinement, incarceration, some menial position, thinking you miss God's will, when in fact you're about ready to have your greatest insights. So there he is, and he's writing to these seven churches, and one of them is the Church of Philadelphia. And so a lot of people will tell you that, you know what, this promise is only to the Church of Philadelphia. It's not to us in the 21st century. A lot of people say that. The problem is, the promise is not just given to Philadelphia, it's given to Thessalonica, it's given to Rome. I have the scriptures on the screen. So this is a broader promise than just to the church at Philadelphia. And did you know that verse 13 of Revelation 3 comes after verse 10? What does verse 13 say? To him who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Now, is the noun church there singular or plural? That's plural. So this is a promise to everybody. This is a promise to me. This is a promise to you. It was never intended to be just something to the church of Philadelphia. If you take it only as a promise to Philadelphia, then what do you do with all these other promises? Of a crown, you'll be a pillar in the temple of my God. The name of God and God's city and His new name is written on you. Is that just to Philadelphia? That's to everybody, isn't it? So, number 9, is this promise only to the Church of Philadelphia? The answer to that is no. It's to all of us. It's not to the local church. It's to the church what? Universal. And this takes us to number 11, our 11th and final point or question. How does this view that I'm giving of Revelation 3, verse 10, how does it harmonize with the rest of the book of Revelation? That's kind of an important question to ask when you study the Bible. Because if you come up with an interpretation of something that doesn't fit the rest of the book, you might want to rethink your interpretation. Because the Bible, at the end of the day, can't contradict itself. God can't say one thing on Monday and something different on Tuesday. That's contrary to His character, because God can't what? He can't lie. So if my view that we're removed totally from this time period doesn't fit with the rest of the book of Revelation, then maybe I need to go back to the drawing board. So we have to conclude with question number 11. Does this view harmonize with the rest of the book of Revelation? Now, here in chapter 1, verse 19 is the outline to the book of Revelation. Therefore, as Jesus is speaking to John, write what you have seen, the things that are, and the things that will take place after these things. Part 1, write down what you have seen. That's chapter 1. That's the vision of the glorified Christ that John saw one day on the island of Patmos. You know, he was with Jesus 60 years earlier in his incarnation. And now he sees Jesus in his glorified state. And what does he do? He falls down on the ground like he's dead. He's terrified him. And Jesus, Revelation 1, puts his hand on John's shoulder to comfort him. That's chapter 1. That's write down the things that you have seen. Then he says, write down the things that are. What's that? That's section 2. That's Revelation 2 and 3, the seven letters to the seven churches. Then he says, write down the things that will take place after these things. Meta tauta in Greek. After these things. When does that section start? Look at Revelation 4, verse 1. After these things. Aha! Got it clear. After these things, I looked. In other words, chapter 4 through 22 is the section of the book of Revelation that most people know a little something about. They may not know much about the first two sections, but it's the futuristic vision. Write the things that you have seen, chapter 1, the things that are, chapters 2 and 3, the things that will take place after these things, chapters 4 through 22. Now let me show you something that's very, very interesting here. The word church, or the Greek word ekklesia, is used 19 times in chapters 1, 2, and 3. The first two sections of the book. You get into that third long section. How many references are there to the church, the Greek word ekklesia? Zero. Other than at the very end, it says preach these things in the churches. Other than that, the word church isn't even there anymore. Do you find that a little odd? I mean, why would a word be used so heavily in the first three chapters and then suddenly the word disappears in the third section of the book?